welcome back, everyone. Hope you're having a good week so far. I'm Henrik, and we're glad that you're with us. Today on Red Ice Radio, Lennon Honor is back. He's a writer, musician, video producer, and a counselor. He's also more recently published two books, Deep in the Garden of Consciousness and the 9/11 Fear-Based Mind Control Program. As we begin here in the first hour, we're going to discuss family, roles, female-male relationships, but also manhood, fatherhood, and how to raise children. We all want to empower ourselves, and Lennon talks about how we can move towards what he calls cosmic respectability. So stay with us here. Much more is coming up. And welcome back, Lennon. Great to have you back with us again. It was actually 2009 in July, though, so we're coming up at 4 years here, almost here in a couple of days. That's it feels amazing. It feels like we talked maybe 2 years ago or something like that, just flown by the time.
Yeah, it feels like 2 days ago, and I was excited to get a chance to come back and speak with you, and I'm so honored to be able to spend some time with you on your wonderful, wonderful radio show.
Excellent. Thanks, Lennon. Of course, last time we had you with us, we talked quite a bit about transhumanism, of course, media programming, sexualization of the whole transhumanist agenda and where that's going, of course. But what have you been up to in the last 4 years since we last talked? Yeah, I know that you've been kind of, continuing this theme as well, but you've been kind of bridging out into other topics as well.
Yes, and that's part of the growth process. I think we all start at a certain point, and we get into particular topics, and we research those topics, and some of us, we produce radio shows around those topics. Some of us, we produce documentaries and so forth and so on. And as we progress as individuals, we progress as human beings, we progress in our own families, et cetera. The nature of the topics that we begin to look into will also change based upon our own internal growth and internal change. And though I still tackle to a great degree the topics that I would address in the past, like say if we went back 4 years ago then with media manipulation and mind control, transhumanism, et cetera, though those topics are important and I still address those to a degree, I've also made a bit of a transition over the last 4 years to address topics that deal more so with the human species and its progressions as a whole collectively in trying to develop solutions to a lot of the challenges that we face as a species. So in short, that means to figure out ways to empower the species. And that's where I get into topics dealing with personal growth, dealing with male-female relationships, dealing with how to raise children consciously, home birthing, all these types of things. And these are the types of topics that I've gotten into over the last 4 years that I still tackle and deal with the other topics as well.
Very good. Well, there's a lot of things we're going to get into, of course, and you've released a book as well, that 9/11 Fear-Based Mind Control Program. I want to talk more about that later, but basically what you're saying is you've started to tackle some of the most fundamental issues, as we as humans kind of deal with and struggle with as well, in a time where it seems on those kinds of front when it comes to family, role models and, how to, if you will, play, the role, in a way, is kind of... It's being changed. I think anyone who watches the media, but also even, watches the climate out there in the world can kind of see that it's splitting up. Is that partially why you wanted to address some of these issues as well, Lennon? Because there is a lot of, confusion, shall we say, today out there about, who we are and what roles we should play.
Yes, absolutely. And when we say who we are on two levels, one in terms of how we relate to each other as human beings here on the planet. So that's, and in particular, dealing with male-female relationships, there's so much propaganda out there and programming that literally has men and women at odds with each other and at war with each other. I call it the male versus female war imprint program. And this holds profound implications as it relates to the species moving forward. We raise children, how we conceive children, how we choose to raise them, how we choose to birth them. If we're not on the same page as men and women, as husband and wife, if you will, as mates, if you will, then how are we going to be on the same page in terms of raising our children in a particular way to where they're more empowered than we were, and then raising the species up as a consequence of the next generation being more empowered and then the next generation being more empowered and the next generation. So my wife and I, we've dealt a lot with this particular issue of male-female relationships and how to establish positive male-female relationships and the value that it has on the planet right now, even in the midst of all of the programming that has us at odds with each other. And then on another level, too, I have to say, Henrik, and that is the empowerment of the species. In other words, when we talk about, what we are and how we relate to each other, what is this human species? What is this biological organism? I have another book, Deep in the Garden of Consciousness, which gets into metaphysics and spirituality. Why are we actually here on the planet? These are questions that I would say 4 years ago, though they were in my mind, these were not not questions that I could answer clearly. Yeah. But over the last 4 years, I've really delved into the purpose for this species, why we are here on the planet Earth, what we are meant to do, and then how we can fulfill this particular what I call spiritual obligation or spiritual contract as a being that's here on the planet that is supposed to uplift the planet itself. Just like in male-female relationships, we're supposed to uplift each other as men and women so that we can bring forth the next generation that is more empowered. With the same thing on a species level, to uplift the species so that the species itself pays tribute to the reason why it is here.
Very good. Well, there's some exciting topics, of course, to talk about. Why don't we stick to the male-female war a little bit here? I wanted to ask you what you think is driving, well, of course, both the programming, but also the war, as you term it, and why this is happening right now.
Yes. Well, part of it is, like you said earlier, it's the role model. I think that a lot of us, we are raised within dysfunctional male-female relationships. In many cases, we see this in our parents. And in some cases, we see it in our parents. We also see it in our family members. And I can give an example myself, just as a personal example, that I didn't necessarily see a positive male-female relationship growing up. Now, my wife and I, we've been married for 12 years now, not legally per se, but we're married in consciousness, okay? So our commitment reaches beyond, paperwork or what have you. And we've raised five wonderful babies. I think since the last time we spoke, I've now added two, maybe three more.
Congratulations.
And in this process of raising five, and our oldest is now nine, we've learned some very profound lessons. But we also know that part of the reason why our children, what they represent, it's almost like a great experiment. We're raising them outside of the control network. We homeschool our children. We feed our children ourselves. We're vegan. We don't have them eating unhealthy food. We don't have a television inside the home. We home birth our children. That means that we birth our children. Our first two we did at a birthing center. The last three we did here at home, and we didn't have any external intervention. It was me and my wife and our children, and we gave birth to our last three children here at home. Wow. We do a lot of things that are quite different. And what the beautiful thing about it is, we see in our children now, as they're getting older, our oldest is nine, the youngest is two, we see the empowerment of the species in our children, and they're privy to this experience of being cared for and loved by their parents. And then in the midst of this, they get to see an accurate, positive representation of a male-female relationship where there's no fussing or any fighting or any arguing. My wife and I, we've never argued, any of that kind of stuff. We do have our challenges, but most important is that I care for my wife, she cares for me. Now, when I was growing up, I didn't see that. I didn't see a man who loved his wife. I didn't see a man who protected his wife. In fact, my father was very abusive to my mother physically, verbally. He was also an alcoholic. He was a drug addict. He got onto crack. Once he got onto crack, it was just total chaos in the home. And wow. Even while I was in the home for the first 13 years of my life, I can't remember one experience where I said to myself, look at my father protecting my mother. Look at my father loving my mother. Look at my father protecting me. Mm-hmm. Look at my father functioning as a positive role model as to what it means to be a man, to be able to function as a man. Now, part of the challenge is for many of us, because we don't see that, it impacts the manner in which we develop positive relationships with our species have. So what the control network in essence does, and this is part of the war imprint program, is that the system itself is designed so that we fail in male-female relationships. It's been going on for such a long time. It's in the movies. Rarely see a movie where you see a man who's operating like a man and he's loving a woman, he's taking care of the woman, he's protecting the woman, he's not disrespecting the woman. You don't see any of that kind of thing these days. You rarely do you see this. It's in the music. Okay, and I've done a lecture series dealing with hip hop in terms of the programming and the psychological warfare within hip hop music and rap music, and how it has impacted young males, young African American males in particular, in terms of how they perceive themselves as men and how they relate to women. Yeah. The whole system is designed to create dysfunctionality in male female relationships. This always carries over into the quality of our relationships, and then ultimately what our children experience if we so choose to have children. And so long as there is dysfunction, and then there is this perpetual war between men and women, this will be transmitted to the next generation. And what better way to maintain this species in a controlled state than to have this basic level of dysfunction perpetuate itself cross-generationally? That's what this control network is about. It's not us as individuals right now. It's about maintaining the species for perpetual generations within a controlled network. And how does that happen? Well, in the first place, one of the primary things that has to take place is to create dysfunctionality as to how men relate to women. My wife and I, we work with this concept. We call it the wholeness principle. I don't see my wife as being outside of me, because I don't see a woman as being outside of me. My wife, she does not see me as being outside of her because she doesn't see a man as being outside of her. We're complementary parts, and there is power in that. So to cut us in half, have us fighting amongst each other as a species, it cuts our power in half. Well, what it's called divide and conquer. What better way to maintain the species in a state of perpetual dysfunctionality and control?
Oh, yeah. You're so right, and there are so many aspects to this. I mean, this is one of the most fundamental components that we have in throughout human history that we know of, because we know that we're here. That means that we're, you know, we procreate, we have family units, you know, in different ways. But this is something that's there's been a war on the family, you know, for generations now, and specifically within the media, as you say, usually the male, and we brought this up so many times on the program in the past, of course, but everything has to do with the. With the idiocy, basically, of the male, that they're incapable, they're like children. And sadly, today, you know, in many regards, that's true as well for some of them out there, for some of us out there, because this is, you know, the role, if you will, that people are now falling into and believing that that's how they're supposed to be. So it's a feedback mechanism there. But what has happened with the man and the role model of the man? Because we hear today with today's propaganda as well that these are all social constructs, like it doesn't have a basis in history or our past or even genetic in that sense. It's just a thing we come up with. What do you think? What do you make about that, Lennon?
Yeah, well, see, some people might say that, you know, this level of buffoonery and within inherent or so-called inherent in men is just natural. You know, so when you get the example, and this is so true, the programming in televisions, you see the male, even in cartoons, the male, he's always acting a buffoon. Never has intellectual process. It's almost like he has boyish characteristics, and he's only interested in those things that a boy would be interested in.
That's so right.
His level of functionality, and I'm very clear about this, that any male out there, if you have boyish qualities and you're operating like the boy, like a boy, there's no way that you're going to be able to be an adequate mate to a woman, let alone to be a father to your children, because there is a level of ascendancy that we must embrace as we transition from boyhood into manhood. Coming into manhood, this means that you have to be have more responsibilities. You also have to have intellectual process. You also have to understand what needs to be done so that your family is protected, and also so not just physically but also psychologically, etc. So there are people who may say, well, this is just part of the natural progression of the species, that for some reason it's okay now for us to operate like boys when we're 25, 30, 35, 40, and we can act like buffoons as well. But I'm very clear that is that functional? Okay, as a species, our power is derived based upon the relationships and the quality of the relationships that we develop. That could be the relationship with on the job. That could be a relationship in terms of your family institution. That could be a relationship in terms of you as a man and your children. The quality of your relationship is your power. So what happens is that if you can cause a young boy, and this is the programming that we receive, if you can cause a young boy to be stuck in a state of perpetual boyhood, then he will not be able to come and ascend into manhood, and therefore his functionality within male-female relationships or his functionality as a father will be greatly diminished. Now, someone can say that that is a natural occurrence, but I don't think that that is a natural occurrence.
No.
That is the result of specific media, in particular, media mind control programming, but it's also expressed within religious dogma and doctrine as well. The control network is designed, and the most profound thing about this, at least from my vantage point, is that which resists the control network the most is the masculine being. It is the man. He is the one that says, wait a minute, I'm not going to take, if his faculties are in order, okay, if his mentality is correct, he's the one that fucks the system. He's the one that says, this system is not in the best interest of my family. So if you take him out of the equation, if you diminish his ability to function as a man, and you limit his functionality within male-female relationships within as a father to his children, etc., what you do is you eliminate that part of the species that ultimately would put forth the greatest amount of resistance to the system itself.
That's right. Yeah.
So it's like you said, it's a feedback loop, because once you get it started, then you got the next generation whose role model was based upon a devolved archetype for manhood, and then they embrace that, and then they get the next round of programming that further diminishes this quality of masculinity and manhood, and then the next generation embraces that one, and then so as a species, we're talking about the degradation of masculinity within the species itself, and that is quite dysfunctional, and it maintains the power structure as is.
You have media, then on top of that you do have school and education, basically, as you said, the state taking over this role of raising our children. I mean, you're lucky to be able to homeschool your children for a variety of reasons. I brought this up many times. Worth mentioning again, Sweden banned homeschooling many years ago. There is no options, no alternative in the few, you know, quote-unquote private, they're not really private, but the few private schools you have are under government, you know, regulatory, you know, processes anyways. It doesn't really matter. They set the curriculum, et cetera, so there's no other options. So that's just, that's a major part, I feel, in terms of, you know, who is raising our children.
Yeah, absolutely. In the school system, and in case, in point of fact, here in the United States of America, the public education system, it's a more recent phenomenon when we talk about historically speaking. But that is the first institution that functions to break up the family unit is the public education system. It really is. And see, my wife and I, we were very clear about that. Like, we have to be able to raise our children and educate our children ourselves and feed our children, because it establishes a relationship between parent and child. And for a lot of us, our relationship to our children is impeded upon. And really, at a certain point, it almost becomes impossible, because we don't see our children for most of the day. Our children are being raised, you know, by the state in essence. And that's a problem. So the system, I mean, in terms of the control network, it's a masterful system, because we have people who ultimately do not raise their children. And there's many reasons for this. And in some cases, it's because of the social engineering over the decades. We've gotten to the point we feel like this is the natural thing to do. So everyone does it, so we're going to do it. You know, everyone vaccinates, so we're going to do it. Everyone circumcises their son, so we're going to do that. I was circumcised. Am I going to have my son circumcised? Absolutely not. I was vaccinated. Am I going to vaccinate my children? Absolutely not. I was in the public education system. Am I going to have my children in the public education system? Absolutely not. The public education system takes children out of their home environment. And in essence, it takes them away from their family. It takes them away from their mother. It takes them away from their father. So my wife and I, we decided that we were going to do something different. And we are seeing the results. We're beginning to see the results of our decisions to not vaccinate, to home birth, to homeschool, to not have our children in the public education system, et cetera. We're seeing the results now. And it's almost like a great experience, a great experiment to see what is it inherent in this species that is much more profound than what we may have been led to believe. What is the power inherent in us that has been taken away because of different levels of indoctrination in the public education system, in religious institutions, etc., throughout our lives, that has taken away a certain degree of internal power? And we're beginning to see this within our children, the degrees of power inherent in the species. But in order to do that, we have to make an adequate choice to do something different, to do something that is unexpected, and to do something that is going to empower not only our children, but also to empower the species long term.
Yeah. Indeed. Why do you think that these bad traits that you mentioned earlier on the fathers and everything like that, that the role model or how they've behaved, why that passes down to the children? I mean, why does it reflect so badly upon them when some people try to argue? I go back to that point again, that these are just kind of social constructs or you know, it's not really genetic. It's all in the environment. And therefore, you know, that's the main culprit. So from their point of view, if you will, the state schooling education proponents and all that, that's why it's important to take children out of, you know, the home to try to. I mean, that's been one of the reasonings actually in Sweden that you hear from some of the people there that said, you know, no, the negative, you know, biased views of the parents basically could be passed down to the children. And that's why it's important to basically have it centrally controlled, which is a horrible thing. It's absolutely horrible. But what do you think, Lennon?
Yeah, well, the first thing I think about is that, and this is to be honest, that most parents are not responsible for their children. They don't want to be responsible, in part because their parents weren't responsible for them. See, responsibility as an idea must be observed by children in order for them to understand what it means to be responsible for anything. But for me, for my wife and I, for us to be responsible for our children, truly responsible for everything, what they eat, what they see, you know, when they're on the internet, we don't have a television at home, but we're very careful about what we expose them to and what they read, you know, the different things that we teach them. We're very clear. My wife and I, we sit down and we talk about these things because we want to make sure that we are doing the best that we can for our children. And in order to do that, you have to be responsible. So to be quite honest with you, many people, the arguments that people make as to why they give their children up to the public education system or what have you, it's really, in many cases, it's based upon irresponsibility. In some cases, it's not necessarily irresponsibility. In some cases, it's an issue of economics, meaning that they can't afford to be at home raising their children. They have to work in order to keep the lights on, to keep the bills paid, et cetera.
Yeah,
I understand all those dynamics, but I want people to know that it can be done. It can be done. In some cases, you have a single mother. Well, how am I going to be able to, you know, homeschool my own children where I have to work and I don't have other income coming in, et cetera? So the complexities of it all, we have to consider that too. But ultimately, I want people to understand that most of us, we were raised to be irresponsible for our children. And in point of fact, our parents were, for many of us, our parents weren't necessarily responsible for us. See, the system is designed to create irresponsible parents. And it starts right in the beginning when the state says you have to put your child in the public education system. You don't have to be responsible for them yourself. You don't have to be responsible for what they eat while they're here in the public education system. You don't have to be responsible in terms of what they're learning. You don't even have to be responsible for their socialization, which is a whole other topic in terms of what's taking place in the public education system, especially here in the United States of America. There's no way, it's like a battlefield. There's no way that I'm going to have my children in that battlefield. Mm. And all types of things that takes place there and all of the influence. We're talking about children who are being exposed to porn now at the age of 8. And this pornographic depictions and programming is being embedded into their subconscious mind and they begin to act on it. And then they have premature sexual activation and then now they're in the public education system and my children are there too. No, I have to be more responsible than that. I'm not going to have my children in that arena. So though people may argue that, you know, it's that even, you know, being responsible, they will say that that's just something that's a program too. Well, it comes down to this functionality, functionality as a parent, functionality as a husband to my wife, functionality as a father to my children. It's about functionality. And what is my function? And is my function as great as it can be? And I will tell you that any parent who is irresponsible for your child, you're not embracing the full power of you. And you're not definitely not embracing your ability to positively impact your child in the most profound ways that will ultimately provide the child with a new opportunity to experience a greater life than you did. And if this is perpetuated cross-generationally, what would take place is each successive generation, you would see the empowerment of the species, which now reaches beyond the individual, and now we're looking at the collective as a species. But so long as we alleviate our levels of responsibility for our children in the first place, there's no way that we're going to get this species back on track to what I call cosmic respectability. We can look at it on the individual level in our own little environment here with our own little family, but we also have to look at the deeper implications as it relates to the species and us getting back on track to a level of cosmic respectability, and that is not going to take place so long as we are irresponsible for our children.
Very good. Now, let me ask you this. It must be very difficult in today's world to, you know, not only have the view you have, of course, but to have Chia Luna and then try to make the right choices in terms of, well, in one hand, it's about protecting, but in another way, it also it acts as a shielding. When you were talking, it kind of reminds me actually of the story of Siddhartha, you know, or the Buddha when he's a young boy. He's kind of raised in a shielded environment, you know, inside the walls of this palace in a way. And when he comes out into the world, you know, he doesn't know about all the suffering, if you will, out there in the world. And so what I'm getting at is that could there be a similar situation as well for your sons or daughters when they grow up, if they have a different environment, if you will, in the home, and then once they get out there, they realize how different everything is? Is that something you've been thinking about and worrying about?
Yes. I've thought about it. My wife and I, we've talked about that. And see, my wife and I, we've experienced enough levels of suffering in our life to recognize that there's a difference between necessary suffering and unnecessary suffering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And this is to say that a lot of the suffering that children experience when they're exposed to the world is completely unnecessary and it's not productive. It doesn't empower them in any degree. And in many cases, it functions as levels of trauma. And that's unnecessary. There are levels of pain and suffering that we might experience throughout our lives that was necessary and we learned profound lessons, et cetera, and I recognize that. So what my wife and I, our approach simply is this, that we function as responsible parents, and of course we protect our children, and that's what we should do. But then we're also very clear in this process, we have to develop our children's intellectual process. In other words, we have to begin to develop their mind so that they can think through things. See, in some cases, it's not necessary to have a particular experience to have a level of understanding about that experience. In some cases, it's merely about observing that experience or being taught about that experience by your parent. And then based upon that, you can use your intellectual process to determine whether or not that is a path that you're going to take or an experience that you want to experience, or if a particular situation comes up, how to deal with that particular situation. In other words, the preeminent responsibility that we have as parents, for my wife and I, is to not only protect our children physically, but to also to develop their intellectual process, to develop their minds.
Yeah.
Now, it could be argued that by doing this, we're protecting them from all of the harm in the world, and that when they grow up, they're not going to know how to deal with all of the harm in the world. But this gets back to one of the primary concepts that I like to deal with, and that is that who is to say that as a species we are here to suffer?
Right.
You see, who's to say that that must be the model, that the pain and the suffering must be the model by which we are raised, and that if we don't raise our children that way, then they're going to be ill-prepared to deal with that situation or circumstance that is rooted in trauma and pain. Well, why do we set the bar for our human experience so low? See, that's what I mean by it is an experiment. It is an experiment to see what's possible for this species if it's not traumatized? What's possible for my son if he's not subjected to pornographic depictions of women? What's possible for my daughters if they see their father loving their mother? What's possible? As opposed to saying, well, you know, when they get out there, if that's all they see, they're not going to know how to deal with someone who's abusing them. Why do we put that out there? See, the standard that we set is so low. And I'm very clear about this, that if we build our children's mental faculties, they will be able to handle any given situation or circumstance. And because my wife and I, we experienced so much trauma growing up as children, there are lessons that we can teach our children that will benefit them so that they don't have to have those same experiences. And if those situations or circumstances ever present themselves, they will have a reference point. In other words, they will be able to say, well, my father dealt with that when he was a child. My mother dealt with that when she was a child, and she told me about that. I have the knowledge about that. Now, this is how I'm going to use that knowledge in this situation so that it doesn't affect me in a negative way. Okay? And this gets back to the standard that we set for the species. It's not about preparing our children to deal with suffering and pain. It's about preparing our children so that they can create consciously a reality that is based upon love. And it's possible to do that. It is totally possible to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope you're right in terms of where the world is going. But obviously, the point here is that it's you should have the right to set that preference yourself as opposed to someone else. I mean, this goes to the heart of the matter of what freedom is. We must have the right to our own life and raise our children the way we want it, and then when they're adults, they can make the decisions for themselves. But that's again, it goes back to that idea that the majority of people today have given up that level of responsibility, because I believe that the state and other modalities out there of control and manipulation has been seeking to make the human being basically dependent and incapable of dealing with this responsibility, right?
Yes, and that's one other thing that came to mind while you were saying, and that was very interesting. Many of us, when we talk about responsibility, many of us we have been programmed to think that, okay, I'm going to have these children, and I'm going to basically, at a certain point, I'm going to give them to the state and let the state raise them. And for anyone who does that, I'm not saying that you're a bad parent or anything like that, because I'm saying that this is the current social norm. Okay, so it's not like it's almost like second nature nowadays, because we have been programmed this way, for decades. We don't even necessarily even think about it. So I'm not saying that anyone's a bad parent because they have their children in the public education system. I was
sure.
Raised in the public education system. My wife was raised in the public education system, and I consider my mother to have been a wonderful parent given her situation and circumstance, and I honor her for all that she did for me. But one of the things I think is important for people to understand is that part of the programming is that not only do we hand our children over to the state and let the state raise them from the age of anywhere from 4 all the way to the age of 17, maybe 18. Not only that, but once your child turns 18, you're no longer responsible for them. Here in the United States of America, they become legal age, and now you're no longer. And there are parents who literally say things like, I can't wait till you turn 18 so that I can get you out of my house and I don't have to deal with you anymore. When we talk about responsibility, see, this is a construct that has been imposed upon the species. When the child reaches a particular age, regardless of where they're at intellectually, regardless of whether or not they're prepared to deal with the world, that they're thrown out there to the world, thrown out to the wolves, and then now they're suffering. See, my wife and I were very clear. We don't have an age limit by which we alleviate ourselves of responsibility for our children. In other words, if my son is 25 and he needs my help, I'm going to help him. If my daughter needs my protection and she's 22, I'm going to protect her because I'm responsible for her regardless of what age, until such time that my sons and daughters develop a level of intellectual aptitude to where they can handle situations and circumstances on their own, I am going to be there. This doesn't mean that I'm going to be solving all their problems. This means that I'm going to be there to guide them, to protect them, to give them a little bit of advice. But a lot of us, because of how we were raised, we figure, okay, because when I turned 18, that's when my father and my mother, they said, okay, that's enough with you, get out of the house. Then when I have children, when they turn 18, I don't have to really deal with them either anymore. See, when we talk about responsibility, I'm going to be there for my children as long as they need me to be there. And it is not until such time that they have a level of intellectual processes where they can deal with what's out there in the world. That's when I can kind of, you know, I can be at peace and say, okay, go on out and go ahead and be fruitful and multiply yourself. Okay. but I'm not going to do that prematurely, because a lot of us, some of y'all listening to this broadcast, you know this to be the case. A lot of us, because our parents didn't take care of us long enough and didn't take care of us enough in the first place, and because at a particular age we were thrown out into the woods, we suffered unnecessarily. And that unnecessary suffering has become a modality. It's become so normalized and it's not necessary. Okay. So, in other words, we have to take on a level of responsibility that reaches beyond the current paradigm. And what we find is that if we take on these levels of responsibility, our children will be more empowered long term, and this will ultimately empower the species.
Well, someone must question where we are going and question if what now goes on automatic, pretty much, you know, the raising of children and everything else in our world is it taking us forward? Are we heading in the right direction? Why not, you know, have attempts to try something different and a different approach and fundamentally question? One of the main problems here, though, is that a lot of people have the idea that, you know, it's kind of this linear progression kind of ideology that whatever we're doing, we're always heading in the right direction, you know, and we're getting better and, you know, everything is, you know, more getting better and better as we go, right? That's a common kind of conception out there in the world. While you, on the other hand, Lennon, has an idea that, you know, no, things are going backwards. It's falling apart. It's crumbling, right? So this is a huge problem right there.
Yeah. And you're absolutely right. And I know we're laughing about it, but we don't mean to make joke about it, because it is serious in that sense. And that is that it's true. There are people who believe that some of the most outlandish things that are taking place on the planet are somehow progressive.
Yeah.
You know, like vaccinating. You know, this is a medical establishment and it's state of the art. You know, vaccinate your children or circumcise your son, cut pieces of his penis off. You know, these types of things.
Yeah.
I mean, because it's become so normalized, there are people who don't question that. But that comes down to mind control program. I've dealt a lot in that field. And I think that it takes a particular type of a person to begin to at least ask questions about the human experience. I think that that's really what it comes down to. What is this human experience all about? And whatever it is that we're experiencing collectively as a human species, is this the best that we can experience? And many people, they will say, we are progressing as a species. Well, I will say nay. You know, in point of fact, I will say that this species has devolved and it is being devolved. And as a consequence, there is a spiritual degree of spiritual responsibility that we have alleviated ourselves of as a species. And this gets back to what I call cosmic respectability. So long as we believe that everything is okay and that this is the best that we can do as a species, there's no way that we're going to be elevated to the point where, you know, in the cosmos, we are respected, because in point of fact, what we are embracing as a species is a form of degradation. And this is not to paint a horrible picture about what's taking place on planet Earth. What I'm trying to illustrate here is that if, in fact, we have the power to basically alleviate ourselves of these levels of responsibility so that we embrace a paradigm that is dysfunctional and disempowering to us, then this also means that we also have the power to do something different.
Yep.
It's really that simple. We have the power to do that. And it's interesting because we make all types of excuses. We say, well, the state's going to come in and take my children. I don't have any fears of that ever taking place. I can care less about what any state or official has to say about the matter. It's about being responsible for my children. And I can care less. That's, again, part of masculine manhood. This is what it's about. You have to get to the point where you have a level of courage. Part of our disempowerment as a species has been that we have been placed in a state of perpetual fear. We're fearful of everything. We're fearful of things that are real. We're fearful of things that are unreal. We're fearful of things that are imaginary. And as long as we're operating in a state of fear, we won't take responsibility, because we always externalize power as a result. And as long as we externalize power, there's always going to be someone to come along and dominate.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, I just, you know, Lana had made this note here. Obama wants to put the 4-year-olds in school now, public preschool, basically, because it will, you know, what did he say? He said, Obama said, America needs to start enrolling 4-year-olds to make sure that children are quote-unquote, better prepared for the demands of the global economy and help parents to save on child care costs. How about that, you know?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Well, that again goes back to what I was saying earlier, and that is that if you can take a child out of its natural environment, you and ultimately you're going to traumatize that child. In other words, if you strip the child away from its family, which should be the natural environment within which it is raised, you traumatize the child, you traumatize the family, and then now the child is put into an environment which is really quite warlike, where the child is being indoctrinated into ideas and concepts that are completely the antithesis of what the parents may be wanting to instill into the child, and now you got war between the child and the parents. And guess what? The earlier on that can take place, the better. Interestingly enough, part of the reason why children are taken into the public education system at a particular age is because most children are operating during that time based upon their subconscious mind.
Yeah.
It's not until later on in life to where we come into a level of conscious awareness. We begin to make choices based upon our conscious understanding of life, our conscious understanding of our relationship to the world. So it's very specific. You have to get the children at a particular age, because if you can get them at a particular age where they're basically operating based upon their subconscious mind, everything that you say to them, everything that you teach them, all the ideas, the social constructs, so forth and so on, is going to be embedded within their subconscious mind at a very early age, and they will be completely unaware of it. And then later on in life, all of that program begins to perpetuate itself, including what I call the male versus female war program, including just like in school, children are divided based upon, this is a boy, this is a girl. But then also the concept of classism. What grade are you in? I'm in the first grade. I'm in the second grade. I'm in the third grade. I'm in the fourth. That's classism. All of that is embedded within the subconscious mind of the child, and much, much more. And then in addition to this, you get all of the other programming that comes in based upon all the other children who are basically centralized in a particular environment, which is the public education system. And all of these external influences of all these other children, some of these children are watching, rap videos. Some of these children are watching porn on the internet. Some of these children are having sexual intercourse at very early ages. Some of these children have foul mouths. Some of these children are eating McDonald's, etc. You can have all of this all centralized in a location, and then you have all of these young children who are operating based upon their subconscious mind, receiving these different degrees of influence and programming. And then we wonder why, when our child turns 18, we say, whose child is this?
Yeah, that's right.
I don't know you.
And then the parents are to blame for it if something goes wrong, right?
Yeah, and that's the interesting thing. You put them in the public, but if something goes wrong, the parent is to be blamed for. But the point being is that Obama, that's very specific. It's like the earlier on you can divide the family, the better you can control the people. It's that simple.
Yep.
The sooner you can take that child out, the sooner you can program the child. But what you're doing is you're breaking up the family institution.
You collectivize and socialize the child as well. The traits of individuality are eroded, I think, very early if you do it in that way. And also an extension to this, then, not only the children, but back to the point of the men for a while. It's very popular, if I can use that term, to blame the men for all the problems in the world today. It's kind of sanctioned and acceptable today with a history of patriarchy, etc. This is what many people has identified as the main problem. That this is, the men are, what's responsible for what's wrong in the world today. And I think that the strategy of the breakup of the family has started with this kind of, war on men, if we can call it that, as we now see it. And I think that's why they began in this end. What do you think, Lennon?
Well, my wife and I, because we do personal consultations, and we deal with women and men. And in some cases, the women want to blame the men, and in some cases, the men want to blame the women. And what I would say is, as a man, I'm just talking from a vantage point of a man, I'm not so much interested in who to blame. I'm more interested in what is the solution. And this is to say that for me and my wife, the solution is positive male-female relationships. See, if positive male-female relationships were normalized, then we wouldn't have these levels of dysfunctionality in the first place.
Right.
But there's a feedback loop. Because there's so many levels of dysfunctionality, and ultimately what it stimulates within the general population is dysfunctional male-female relationships. Okay, and then what happens is now we're in competition with each other, and now we're at odds with each other, and then some people want to blame men, some people want to blame women. Well, I'm going to say that there's plenty of blame to go around. And it's not about choosing one person over the other or choosing a man or a woman. It's about recognizing that as a species we have a problem.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Sure.
As a species, and it's so easy to blame men. it's a patriarchy and they're doing this, it's sexist. And so, yeah, that's easy, but that's not solution oriented. The solution is to develop positive male female relationships. And in order to do that, a model must be set. And in order to do that, men and women have to come together in a very respectful and honor, a very respectful and dignified way to where we can begin to develop a positive male female relationship and ultimately provide that as a model for the next generation. If we get caught up in the notion of who we're going to blame, that's divide and conquer. And so long as we have that ideology, and many of us, we run that program, nothing's going to change for the species. It's not about us as individuals, you know, men and women. It's about the collective, what my wife and I, we call the wholeness principle. At some point, we have to begin to see each other as being part of a whole, that the woman and man, we are complementary. We're not separate, that we are part of this. We're are each other's species half, that my wife is the feminine representation of me. I am the masculine representation of her. When you get to that point in terms of male-female relationships and how we conceptualize male-female relationships, not only do you not have these levels of dysfunctionality and then all of these problems, but then you don't have to get to the point where now you're playing the blame game. And it is so true. Yes, a lot of the programming is there to blame men. That's not going to solve the problem. A lot of the programming is to blame women. That's not going to solve the problem that the species is facing right now. What's going to solve the problem is for us in the first place conceptualize a greater concept in terms of male-female relationships that is inclusive, that is holistic, and that is not based upon what I call the male versus female war infant program.
Yeah, yeah. So what do you think about the new family unit that we're being handed right now? If you look at some, I don't know how familiar with these television series you are that's coming out right now, but you know, have things like The New Normal, Modern Family, The Fosters. You know, it's kind of it's not this core, you know, unit anymore. It's, you know, multiple people in one family, it's, you know, same-sex, you know, marriage and everything else that's going on right now. What do you think that this is doing in the long run, in the extension? Is this normal? Is it all okay? What's your view on all this?
Well, it's social engineering. You know, nothing more. It's social engineering. It's also, there's people who classify it as predictive programming. In other words, you program people with a particular idea about male-female relationships or about the family institution. This program has been going on for a long time. It's just that now it's getting to the point where, you know, there's, you know, people in terms of quote unquote gender roles, that's out the air. In terms of roles and men and women within the context of a male-female relationship, that's out the door. The concept of being a responsible man, having a level of intellectual process and not being a buffoon, that's out the door. It's interesting because a lot of those shows, it's comedy driven.
So right. Yep.
Comedy driven, what happens is the comedy and the laughter, it opens up the subconscious mind, it accesses the subconscious mind, and therefore people may be embracing it as a form of entertainment, but what's really taking place is they're being engineered to think along certain lines, and it gets back to functionality. We have to be clear that if we're going to bring children into the world, and not all of us were here to do that, but if you're going to bring children into the world, you have to ask the critical question, are these archetypes for the family institutions that I'm seeing on TV? Are these archetypes for male-female relationships that I'm seeing on the TV? Are these archetypes for man and man relationships or woman and woman relationships that I'm seeing on TV? Are these archetypes functional in the context of me raising a family institution? I think that's a critical question. I think as a species, we have gotten to the point to where the family institution and what that means and the power inherent in it has been so undervalued. It has been the value of it. It's almost like we don't consider it as being, and from my vantage point, it is the family institution that is the greatest power that we have, because what we're able to do through the family institution is to pass on to the next generation from parent to child the best of what we have as a species. And if we can pass the best on to the next generation of what we have as a species, the levels of functionality that we have, we can pass that down, the level of spiritual understandings that we have, pass it down to the next generation, the level of intellectual process that we have, pass it on to the next generation is empowered, and then they should be able to do the same for the next generation. And this is what gets us back on track to cosmic respectability. That's not going to happen if we're sitting back here watching these different levels of media programming that are giving us such devolved archetypes for the family institution, and it's so trivialized. We shouldn't trivialize this inherently powerful institution that we call the family institution. It's interesting. One last thing on this. There are people who say, well, you know, having a family, that's a program too. But I want people to understand this, that you would not exist. No one who's listening to this, you would not even exist if a man and a woman did not come together someplace, somehow, at some point in time. We have to be respectful of that basic premise that in order for us to even exist as a species, at least for the foreseeable future, we have to be able to come together as men and women. And as an outgrowth of our coming together as men and women, we build a family institution. And ultimately, out of this family institution, we give birth to children. And then we perpetuate this down the line. So this is the process. Let me say this for people who don't quite understand what I'm saying. I want to put this in the scope of the experience of love. Part of what we should do throughout our life is to get to the point where we love ourselves enough to where we're not going to put ourselves in harm's way. We're not going to damage ourselves. We're not going to do things that are destructive to our body or that are going to harm ourselves intellectually, psychologically, emotionally, et cetera. We should love ourselves enough. The beautiful thing about this human experience is that as a man, it wasn't until I began to love myself enough to where I valued myself enough that I met my wife. And because I had already done the work, the personal work to refine myself, to deal with my own personal issues, my own trauma, my childhood traumas, et cetera, that I got to the point where my self-esteem was enough to where I began to love myself, I had experienced a level of love that now would had prepared me to begin to love someone else, which came in the form of my wife. So my wife comes onto the scene. My experience of love and what I thought it was about and how I expressed it, now I had to take it to another level because now I just couldn't just love myself. I had to love my wife, too. So now in this process, I'm experiencing and I'm also giving a higher level of love. It's a beautiful thing about the human experience. And then out of this interaction with my wife and building love with her, what people call love, this energy field, if you will, this vibratory state, I'm preparing myself and my wife is preparing herself. We're preparing each other for the next manifestation of this love experience, which comes in the form of children. Now the child, you know, we're impregnated. My wife is impregnated. We're pregnant. And I say we because it is a collective. And because she's pregnant, now I have to be more careful with her. I have to love her even more. I have to be more appreciative of her as a woman, as the most creative being on planet Earth, who has the power to literally create and formulate life within her body. As a man, the levels of love that I'm experiencing and expressing is heightened even more. My wife, because she's building this child in her womb and she's creating life in her womb, she has to express and experience a higher level of love because she is, in essence, creating life. And then the child comes and is birthed into the world. And you have this beautiful little baby who's completely helpless and you got to hold it all the time. It can't do anything for it. And it's about you got, oh, I have to love even more now. You see, this human experience affords us to experience and express higher levels of love. And because when our children came into the world, began to come into the world, we had to experience higher levels of love and express higher levels of love. What we've done is, if I go back in time to when I was 25 prior to meeting my wife at the age of 25, and I look at what the love experience was then compared to what it is now, we have five beautiful babies, been in a marriage for 12 years, and I'm on this wonderful radio show all these years later. Look at this. I'm experiencing a level of love that puts that 25-year-old's experience and what I thought love was about, it just puts it to shame.
Right.
This is the human experience. And so how, in other words, what does this come out of? This progression of this human experience of experiencing higher levels of love and the energy field associated with it comes out of the basic premise of males and females coming together in the first place and then building a family institution and then bringing children into the world in the second. And by bringing these children to the world, now we're able to experience a higher level of love. See, this is to say that we totally have been taught to devalue this basic progression of self to collective to regeneration and duplication. The self being when I was 25 and single, the collective being me and my wife building a family institution. And then, of course, duplication coming in the form of creating children. And each level affords us a different experience of love. That's why the family institution is important. And that's precisely why, in terms of the social engineering and the program they get from media in order to divide the species, but then also to disempower the species, the programming is based upon dysfunctional male-female relationships and dysfunctional family institutions. That holds profound implications.
Oh, indeed. Very good. Very interesting. We're having a great conversation here with Lennon Honor, and we have much more to talk about. We're going to take a break in a little while here between the segments, but I want to talk a little bit about your books and websites as well so people know where they can dive into more of your work. You have, I don't know how many titles you have out there now, but two of them that I'm familiar with is the 9/11 Fear-Based Mind Control Program, and then also, as you mentioned, Deep in the Garden of Consciousness. Tell us a little bit about these books, Lennon.
Yes. The 9/11 Fear-Based Mind Control Program, I completed that a couple of months ago, but I've been talking about it for about maybe three and a half years now. It takes a psychological look at the trauma of September 11, 2001. And I propose inside the book that the trauma of the event itself was not consciously processed. In point of fact, it was subconsciously interpreted. And because it was subconsciously interpreted, it was embedded, the trauma itself of that experience of you know, the horrific scenes and everything else that goes into that the September 11, 2001, the trauma itself was embedded within the subconscious mind. And as a result, that subconscious trauma has gone unresolved. And because it has gone unresolved within the subconscious mind, mass media actually puts forth programming to trigger the trauma. And it's done at very specific times in the year. It's usually done within the 4 weeks leading up to May 2nd of any given year, and then the 6 weeks leading up to September 11th of any given year. We're about to start this next cycle coming up here. But the book takes a critical look at this trauma and how mass media uses this trauma as a form of psychological warfare by triggering the trauma. And in triggering the trauma, which is subconsciously embedded, it causes the global population to unconsciously experience a level of fear that's associated with the initial trauma of September 11, 2001. So that's the premise of the book. But I get into a whole lot of different concepts in it, and that's the 9-1 fear-based mind control program. And my other book is Deep in the Garden of Consciousness. That's getting into spirituality and metaphysics. I also have, my wife also has a cookbook. It's a vegetarian, vegan, and raw cookbook titled The Native Style Cookbook. And I have another book titled, Visions of Manhood that I'm currently writing. All of those books, some of them are already available, or you can find it on linenhonor.com under the link there that says books. And then, of course, you can go to linenhonorfilms.com, and I have a lot of documentary work going back 6 years now.
All right, very good. Now give us your all your websites as well and your YouTube channel so people know where to go.
Yeah, absolutely. On my main website nowadays, we have radio shows there, live video streams, interview guests, etc., is linenhonor.com, LENONHONOR.com. My previous website was linenhonorfilms.com. I have like 4.5, maybe 5 years worth of content there. You can download it there for free. You can watch it for free, etc. And then I have a YouTube account under linenhonorfilms.com, and I upload there from time to time. I also do question and answer videos there as well. And then, of course, I want to make mention, I'm also on Facebook under Linen Honor, if anyone want to contact me there.
All right, very good. Check out the websites and, of course, the books as well from Lennon. We'll have this linked up on redeyescreations.com, so you can click through easily from there. Stay with us, Lennon, and everybody. We'll be right back. We'll take a short break, and we'll talk to you in a few.
Carry on, my wayward son. There'll be peace when you are done. Lay your weary head to rest. Don't you cry no more.
Maybe peace when you want.
As we proceed in the second hour, we're going to discuss his book, The 9/11 Fear-Based Mind Control Program, and how it relates to the media landscape, both mainstream and alternative. Lennon gives us examples of movies that repeat the unresolved trauma of 9/11 and how many people still actually live in fear and unconsciously repeat the trauma by relating it to other events. Lennon shares with us how he thinks we can break this cycle and move out from living in fear and process it consciously so that we're no longer controlled and manipulated by this fear, and specifically then by those who seek to use it against us. To listen to this continuation or any of our previous programs, you can sign up at redicemembers.com for a subscription and get the full Red Ice Radio program and all our other productions that we have available there for you. We're talking about videos, films, commentaries, music, and much more. We'll be back in just a few days. Much more is coming up. Thank you for listening. Don't miss our second hour coming up.